to be able to fill in for Rabbi Goldberg today to be able to teach Torah at the afternoon colon. Because I'm not in my regular slot, I figured I would not do a regular topic, and instead I want to do what is perhaps one of my favorite areas of halacha to delve into, and I want to do it in a very roshi pro. Hello, Rabbi Shabtai. I think you are there. You go. I want to do it in a very broad overview kind of way, just to give a little bit of an insight into how exactly the sugya works, and that is with regards to the international dateline in halacha. I started researching a number of years ago, and then I mentioned that to Rabbi Goldberg, and what he ended up doing was every time he'd get a question about the dateline, he would forward it to me, and that would allow me to then research it even further going forward. So I happen to find this topic very interesting, and someone's not muted, I don't know who that is, but I happen to find it very interesting, and I hope to share that interest with you as well. So I'm going to go ahead and share my screen, and the only makor that you need today is right here. Can I get a thumbs up from, let's see, Rabbi Brand, can you see me? You can see my screen. Okay, two thumbs up, even better than, what's better than one thumb up? Two thumbs up. Okay, so what I want to do is really just help us understand why it is that there's such an enormous machlokas when it comes to the international dateline. What are some of the challenges with each approach? And again, I'm not a international dateline posek, but at least share with you some of the mahalchim that are out there. So that the next time you guys decide to go around the world, you will be well-equipped to deal with the topic. I actually just read today that Viking Cruises, which sells year-long cruises for starting at $50,000 per couple, obviously goes significantly up from there, but they are sold out for the next 2 years, which is incredible to think about. They said there's so much pent-up demand for around-the-world cruises. They are sold out for the next 2 years. Pretty amazing. Buy stock in Viking Cruises. That is the upshot of this year right now. So why do we have a problem with the international dateline? Well, first, we have to understand why there is an international dateline. So let's just zoom out a little bit here. We'll zoom in a little bit later. But let's zoom out here for a second. Hold on. No, that doesn't work. Hold on. My screen is giving me a little problem. There we go. So let's zoom out just a drop. Okay. And what you have here is the international dateline. You have a map of the world. So if we come over here, this is Washington, this is Florida. So it is now 3:05 p.m. in Florida. If you go to the east of Florida and you go to Yerushalayim, which is going to be here, what time is it going to be in Yerushalayim? Well, it's going to be 10:05 p.m. in Yerushalayim, still on Monday, right? We're Monday. So it's going to be 10:05 p.m. on Monday in Yerushalayim. And then if you keep going east, eventually you're going to find your way to India. And what time is it going to be in India right now? Well, I did the math for you already, so you don't have to worry. It is now 1:30 a.m. in India, but it is no longer Monday in India. It is now Tuesday in India. Okay, so it's 1:30 a.m. in India. And as you continue to go to the east, you're eventually going to come to China. And what time is it in mainland China? Again, China is different. Whatever, but it's going to be 4:05 a.m. in China. Okay, 4:05 a.m. in China. Again, not on Monday, but instead it's going to be Tuesday. So it's 4:05 a.m. Tuesday in China. Eventually, you're going to continue to go east, and you're going to come to Hawaii. And in Hawaii right now, it is, anyone want to guess? It is 10:05 a.m. on when? It's 10:05 a.m. It would be 10:05 a.m. in Hawaii on Tuesday morning. And then if you keep on going east, eventually you'd come to California, where it's going to be 12:05 p.m. on Tuesday in California. And eventually you're going to come back to Boca Raton, Florida. And instead of it being 3:05 p.m. on Monday, it is also going to be 3:05 p.m. on Tuesday. Now, obviously, this is a problem because it cannot be both Monday and Tuesday at the exact same time. It can be either Monday or Tuesday. But yet, we just went around the globe. We didn't do anything wrong. We took a flight that went around the globe. It was a supersonic flight. And immediately, we went from 3:05 p.m. in Boca on Monday to 3:05 p.m. in Boca on Tuesday simply by going around the globe and the various time differences. Now, obviously, that is completely absurd. And so what you need to find is you need to find a place where you can say that Monday ends and Tuesday begins. That is the entire genesis of the international dateline. Now, the problem is, where do you put that line? Because if you put that line, let's say, let's come back to our map, and let's say you put the line through Florida, right? So what you could end up happening is that on one side of the street is going to be 3:05 p.m. on Monday, and the other side of the street could be 3:05 p.m. on Tuesday. That is obviously not going to be good for an invitation, right? If I'm inviting you for a meal, and I say, come over to my house at 12 o'clock, well, it's going to be very confusing, right? If you are driving not just between time zones, but you are driving between different days, and I could literally be able to walk across the street and go ahead a day. Now, this would be really convenient when it came to Yom Kippur, when it comes to Tisha B'Av, perhaps on a three-day Yontif, if you want to cut out one of the days of Yontif, it would be amazing because I could stand on my side of the street, right, when Yom Kippur starts, and then I could cross the street and go ahead a day, and poof, the fast would be over. I could literally skip all of Yom Kippur and all of Tisha B'Av. So obviously, that too is an absurdity. And so what they needed to do was they needed to find a specific place where it was not near any land so that nobody wanted the line near them, because then, as we said, two neighbors could be in two different days. So what they did was they basically drew it in the middle of nowhere in the Pacific Ocean. That is essentially what the international dateline is. In 1884, conference made a single universal day with Greenwich would be zero, right? Here you have zero. That goes through Greenwich. Anyone who's ever been there, it's a very fun place to be. You can stand in a bunch of funky areas. I remember when I was a child, we visited there, right? So in 1884, they had a conference that made a single universal day with Greenwich would be zero. And the dateline would be 180 degrees longitude, which is essentially halfway around the world. Now, if you look over here, line C, this is the civil dateline. Now, you'll see it zigzags, right? It doesn't go straight up, because if it goes straight up, what's it going to run into the middle of? It's going to run into the middle of whatever that, I'm sorry. How do I stop that? Yeah, it's going to run through bodies of land. That obviously comes back to our original problem of you don't want two neighbors to be in two different areas at the exact same time. And so instead, you see it's a zigzagging line. And essentially, it avoids any land mass. And the reason why they did it there was it was just the easiest to do there. That was in 1884. Why did they do it in 1884? Well, think about historically, what starts happening a lot more frequently in the 19th century, right? Travel around the world, boat travel becomes much more significant. And as boat travel becomes much more significant, you had the exact conundrum that you and I described at the beginning. Now, what's clear about this line, just by looking at the map, is that it is a completely arbitrary line. Okay, Greenwich, 1884, they got together. They said, we have this conundrum. You can't be in Boca Raton at 3:11 p.m. on Monday, and also at the exact same time, concurrently, 3:11 p.m. on Tuesday. So they made an arbitrary line in the middle of nowhere that would impact as few people as possible, that would essentially delineate when one day starts and one day ends. If you look over here, and again, you could see my mouse, right? Rabbi Brand, give me a thumbs up. Can you see my mouth? Yeah, you can. Okay. So if you look here, right, to the east of the dateline is the day before. To the west of the dateline is the next day. So you're either subtracting 24 hours or adding 24 hours. So it's a significant line, but again, it is completely arbitrary. The problem is when you come to halacha, because while arbitrary datelines can work in a secular calendar, when it comes to halacha, the real date becomes critically important. For example, when it comes to knowing what Shabbos is, right? Just to take an example. Again, it could be Yom Kippur, it could be a lot of examples, but let's take Shabbos, which is the easiest example. Because all of a sudden, a bunch of secular people in 1884 decided that this line would now delineate when Shabbos would be in various areas. So let's pick on Alaska for a second, okay? As I'm traveling east and I hit the dateline there, what happens? Hey, let me zoom in for you a little bit, right? As I'm cutting over here and I'm going into Alaska and it's now, let's say, Shabbos, what happens when I hit that dateline? I go back to Friday, okay? And let's say I'm traveling this way. So if I go from Alaska to, let's say, Russia, China, any of these areas, so what am I doing? The second I cross that dateline, I could be flying on Friday morning. But the second I cross that dateline, what have I reverted back to? I've reverted back to, or I've reverted ahead to, I should say, the next day, which means I'm flying on Shabbos. So it's very nice that they picked a random day, a random line in the middle of nowhere to make things simpler for maritime travel. But when it comes to halacha, it's much more complicated. And the problem is that when you look in the Gemaras and when you look in prime sources, they didn't have this concept of international travel, of a global economy, the way you and I have one now. And so the sources are somewhat minimal in how we are able to determine this issue. Obviously, we know historically, this came to a head in the famous question of the Jews of the Mir Yeshiva, that ended up in Japan during World War II. And they had to know when Yom Kippur was. And that's when the Shiloh was asked to Israel, to the chief rabbinate, Rav Herzog, the Chazon Ish. We're going to get into all of that in just a second. That's when, from a Jewish perspective, it became a very prominent Shiloh. So what I want to do with you is I want to share three basic approaches. I think they're the three most prominent approaches. All of them are expressed on the map that you have here. This is not my map. This is a map from the Star K. It's available and accessible on their website. Out of all the maps that talk about the halachic implications of the international dateline, I found this to be the clearest one, and so I share it with you here. Opinion number one is the approach of the Chazon Ish. It's what we are referring to as line B here. Now, line B is based on Avalam Or. Anyone who's ever learned Maseches Rosh Hashanah will know that around, I think it's Dav Chaf or Dav Chaf Aleph, it gets into very tricky calculations about how the sun moves. It's the story of Rabban Gamliel. It's a very complicated Gemara and it tricks you. Because when you come to the Gemara, you see very little Gemara in a lot of sources. You're like, oh, this Amud's going to take me no time whatsoever. Ha ha ha. Spoiler alert. The more there is on the sides, the harder that Daf of Gemara is going to be. Essentially what the Chazon Ish says, based on those two sources, which I'm not going to get into right now, because again, it's a little technical. But essentially what he says is that the international dateline is a quarter of the globe. So it's 90 degrees east of Yerushalayim. So if Yerushalayim is 35.2, right, longitude, then the Chazon Ish's line is going to be 125.2 longitude. This is based, again, on the Gemara over there, which discusses when the earliest moment that the Molad can be seen. And over there, and again, you could try learning that Gemara without an art scroll, and God bless you if you do. Art scroll has a beautiful picture diagram of it over there. Again, I think it's Dav Chaf or Dav Chaf Aleph. And over there, art scroll explains why, according to some opinions, that 6 hours before Yerushalayim is the earliest that the moon, the Molad, I should say, can be found. So that's going to be a quarter of the globe. And there you have 90 degrees to the east of the 90 degrees east of Yerushalayim. Okay? Past this line is now 18 hours ahead. I'm sorry, is now 18 hours behind Yerushalayim. Okay? 18 hours behind Yerushalayim. Now, what are the ramifications of establishing an international dateline here, where the Chazon Ish puts line B? So you'll notice off the bat that problem number one is going to be Australia, because to the west of line B is going to be Shabbos. To the right of line B is going to be Friday. You're an entire 24 hours behind. So you could be having Shabbos while your neighbor across the street could still be shopping for Friday. That is a significant problem. How is the Chazon Ish going to get around it? So the Chazon Ish bases it on a principle that's called Ein Cholkin Yabasha. Ein Cholkin Yabasha, which officially means you do not split up a landmass, means that the dateline can never split up a body of land. Therefore, what it means is that the line swallows up all of Australia and puts it on the western side. So instead of a straight line, almost envision what the secular dateline does, where it curves a little bit. So here too, it's going to curve out here and come back over there. Now this is obviously huge implications for the Jews of Australia, because now they keep Shabbos on what day of the week? What secular day of the week? They keep Shabbos, all of Australia is going to keep Shabbos on Saturday, which is very convenient. It makes things a lot simpler. And we'll see, not everyone is able to do that. But for the Jews of Australia, they are good. Okay? If Jews on the eastern coast would be on the wrong side of the dateline, right, without the Chazanish's modifications, then they would keep Shabbos on Sunday. And again, that would be a problem. So this doesn't just help Australia. This helps Siberia, which is up here as well. And again, avoids a lot of issues. This only applies to a landmass, but it does not apply to an island. So for example, let's now pick on New Zealand. Right? New Zealand, poor New Zealand, is right over here. Okay? Now New Zealand, according to the Chazon Ish, is to the east of the dateline. But according to the international dateline, right, the secular dateline, it is now going to be to the west of the dateline, which means that New Zealand is now on the wrong side. Because when Judaism says that it's Shabbos for New Zealand, secular calendar comes along and says that it is Sunday for New Zealand. So according to the Chazon Ish, if you live down under, if you went to New Zealand for a big snorkeling trip, you are not going to keep Shabbos on Saturday. You're going to keep Shabbos on Sunday. Where else does this prominently come into play, and does it become a significant issue? Well, you guessed it. That is in Japan. Because again, Japan is to the east of the Chazon Ish's dateline, and it is to the west of the international dateline. So which means that on Japan, in Japan, also, when are you going to keep Shabbos? You're not going to keep Shabbos on Saturday, but rather you are going to keep Shabbos on Sunday, right? It's a full 24 hours. It's a full 24 hours off. This is how the Chazon Ish paskened Lamaisa to the Jews, to the yeshiva students in Mir in Japan, is that he paskened that they should keep Shabbos on Sunday, again, based on a very simple calculation. Again, as you're traveling, according to the Chazon Ish, this now becomes the next day. According to secular calendar, it does not become the next day until here. So you're Sunday here, even though you've gone back a day here, and you're back on Shabbos there. So in Japan, in New Zealand, you've avoided these problems. I mean, you have significant problems where you're going to keep Shabbos on Sunday. Australia avoids the problem altogether because of the Chazon Ish's principle of Ein Cholkin Yabasha, which means you do not split the landmass, and therefore it's going to hook around here, it's going to hook around here, and that is going to avoid the problem altogether. That is approach number one. It is the approach of the Chazon Ish. It's based on the Baal HaMaor in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, that it's going to be 6 hours, which is essentially, it's a 90 degrees to the east of Yerushalayim. That is the opinion over there. Okay. Opinion number two is the opinion of Rabbi Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky. Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky, who's the author of the Sefer Gesher Chaim, and that is indicated based on line E. Now, where does he get 144.8 degrees longitude to the west? Well, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky disagrees with the Chazon Ish. And rather, he argues that Greenwich Shmenage, right? Greenwich knows nothing. Who decided that Greenwich was going to be zero? You know what? If anything should be zero, right? Where was the world created? The world was created from what point in the world? It was created from Yerushalayim, right? Avram of Adam, Yerushalayim, Israel. That should be zero. And if line A is zero, then that puts Yerushalayim, essentially in the middle of the world, 180 degrees to the east of Yerushalayim is going to be line E. That is the approach of Rabbi Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky. So the real dateline is what he thinks is 180 degrees east of Yerushalayim. That puts Yerushalayim in the middle of the world, and that puts the line right through Alaska. Now, what are the advantages and disadvantages of the approach of Rav Yechiel Michalta Kaczynski? Well, the major advantage is that we have now saved the Jews of New Zealand and Japan. Because what? Because New Zealand and Japan are both to the west of the international dateline, both from a secular perspective and from a religious perspective, which means for them, Shabbos is going to be on Saturday. We have avoided any problems for New Zealand and Japan. The problem for the approach of the Gesher Chaim is that in between the secular dateline and the halachic dateline is what? Right? Is going to be off. There's something that's going to be off there. Right? So according to the secular dateline, it's going to be Tuesday. And according to Rav Yechiel Michalta Kaczynski, then it's going to be Wednesday. Now, what does this affect? This affects Hawaii. Okay, this is going to affect Hawaii, right over here. And that's going to mean that on Fridays in Hawaii, halacha is going to view it as Shabbos. Because again, you're going around the globe as you adhere, right? So it's Sunday here. As you adhere, you go back to Shabbos, okay? But you don't do that until here. So according to, in Hawaii, Friday in Hawaii is going to be Shabbos according to the halacha, because Hawaii is always going to be, it's always going to be ahead of the world in that regard. So while Rav Yechiel Michalta Kaczynski's approach has helped the Jews in New Zealand, and it has helped the Jews of Japan, it has now created a significant problem for the Jews of Hawaii, where in Hawaii now, Shabbos is not going to be on Saturday, and it's not going to be on Sunday, but rather, Shabbos is going to be on Friday. That is a significant problem. The third approach is the approach of Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. And Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank in a tshuva writes that you want to know why there's no talking about an international dateline in halacha? Because it simply does not exist. It doesn't exist, right? It was never spoken about. Chazal never could have dreamed of it. They didn't have maritime travel. They didn't have air travel the way you and I have it now. So how do we resolve our problem? Because again, we said it's a secular date and it's a completely arbitrary date. How do we resolve the problem? We resolve it because the halacha is whatever the olam decides is the dateline. That becomes the dateline, right? So whatever secular says is the dateline, that becomes the halachic rationale for the dateline. Now, according to Pesach Frank, that's a brilliant solution because everyone now is able to keep Shabbos on Saturday. Okay, everyone is able to keep Shabbos on Saturday. The interesting part historically about this is, according to his approach, Alaska, right? It means that when Alaska changed hands, right, before it was part of America, so it was on, Shabbos was one day. And then when Alaska became part of America, Shabbos became a different day. Right? Why? Because it goes wherever the international dateline is able to go, whatever time zone you find yourself in at that moment. Again, that's just an interesting tidbit. Okay? Now, each opinion has its solutions, and each opinion has its major problems. And as we articulated, time is not going to allow because I have a hard cutoff today. But if you look in the Encyclopedia Talmudit, it details this entire thing. But again, this all comes to a fore, climax, in World War II, when the Mir Yeshiva students who were in Kobe, Japan, before going to Shanghai. The Chazon Ish writes that when do they keep Shabbos? Again, the Chazon Ish says they keep Shabbos on Sunday. The Ger Rebbe, who bases himself on the opinion of Rav Yechiel Michalta Kaczynski, says that Shabbos in Japan is Saturday. And so what you had was a machlokes between the Lidvisha boys and the Chassidisha boys. Many ended up keeping 2 days of Shabbos until the Shaila came back about Yom Kippur. The question was presented to the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says Yom Kippur is the day after what Japan thought was Yom Kippur, and the Chassidim held that Yom Kippur was on that day itself. Again, this is all based on our entire conversation. So what's the Psak? So in the Hawaii, according to the Chazon Ish, right, in Hawaii now, according to the Chazon Ish, you're going to have Shabbos is going to be on Saturday, according to the Chazon Ish. According to Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, Shabbos is also going to be on Saturday. The only concern in Hawaii is going to be according to the opinion of Rav Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky. And again, according to him, Shabbos is going to be on what day? Shabbos is going to be on, Shabbos is going to be on Friday. Shabbos is going to be on Friday. Okay? So each opinion has challenges and each opinion has its solutions. If you hold like the Chazon Ish, that's going to solve your problem for Hawaii. If you hold like the Gesher Chaim, that's going to solve your problem for New Zealand and Japan. The problem is, right? The problem is that we don't know who's right. It's not like normal halacha. Again, think about how normal halacha evolves. Normal halacha evolves because it's mentioned in the Gemara, and then it develops through the Rishonim, and then it develops through the Achronim, and we have like precedent what to base itself on. Here, you don't have much, so you have a crapshoot, right? In other words, you have the Chazon Ish, you have Rav Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky, you have Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, you decide who to choose. I don't know who to choose, you decide who to choose. So, what they said in Hawaii was that concerning Isurei De'oraisa, right, De'oraisa, because it's a Suffolk, and generally we go Suffolk De'oraisa Le Chumra, so with regards to Isurei De'oraisa, you keep Shabbos on both Friday and on Shabbos, right? Shabbos is the real Shabbos. In other words, when you're going to make Kiddush and you're going to do all that stuff. What happens on Friday? Friday, you just refrain from Isura Deraisa. And for Derabanans, you could be Mekel. Okay? Now, that is obviously not a very popular halacha. And people who are planning a trip to Hawaii, it is obviously puts a significant damper on your trip to Hawaii if you don't just now have to lose one day a week for Shabbos, but you now lose 2 days a week for Shabbos because one of the days, you're also limited in Isura Deraisa. Yeah, it could be Mekel and Derabanans, but you have a problem from Isura Deraisa. So that kind of puts a buzzkill. Chabad, by the way, does not hold to this. Chabad says that Shabbos is Saturday. They have their Mesorah. My guess is the Mesorah is based on the fact that it's very hard to convince people to keep Shabbos. It's a lot harder to convince people to keep Shabbos if they don't have to keep one day, but they have to keep 2 days as well, right? Then it becomes much more challenging, okay? Now let's go to Japan. So Japan, the real Shabbos should be observed on Saturday. According to Rav Tukhachinsky, that's the real Saturday. According to Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, it's also the real Shabbos. But because of the Chazon Ish, you also have to refrain from the Deraisas on Sunday. So the Iker Shabbos in both places is Saturday. But because of Suffolk Deraisa, you have to be careful in both places. Either in Hawaii, where you have to adopt the Isura Deraisa on Friday, or in Japan, in New Zealand, where you have to adopt the Isura Deraisa on Sunday as well. Okay, now this obviously is a little bit challenging, right? This is obviously a little bit challenging. Rabbi Willig, I saw somewhere. Rabbi Willig says that in Hawaii, what his recommendation is to make Kiddush early for Shabbos. So that way, if Friday is the real Shabbos, you'll have at least been Yotze Kiddush on what Shabbos is. You understand the chachma of that? Right? Notice he says, make Kiddush, make early Shabbos in Hawaii. Because Hawaii, there's a suffix whether it's Friday or Shabbos. And so what Rabbi Willig suggests, if you make Kiddush a little bit early on Shabbos, which is now into Friday, if Friday ended up being the correct approach, then at least you've made Kiddush on the actual day itself, right? Obviously, other nafkaminas lahalacha is tefillin, right? Does it really become a new day for you regarding tefillin, regarding davening, regarding shema? Or do you say, for me, it's the same day, right? Now, let's say I'm on a flight and I cross the date line. Do I need to put on tefillin again? Do I need to say kriyat shema again? Do I need to daven again if I'm experiencing the daytime all together in a new way? So most poskim suggest that you don't have to, right? It's not necessary to print out all of the maps and to know exactly when you're going to cross the date line, right? What was that? Okay. That halachos regarding to the time of day are not necessarily affected by crossing the international date line, Right? Other examples are counting Sfira, right? That's another one of the big challenges. If you cross the date line, oh, what just happened? If you cross the date line, did I just lose you? I'm back here. Hello. I'm back. I just got kicked off. All right. I'm back. Let me just mute everyone again. Okay. So when it comes to halachas relating to the time of day, it is not affected by crossing the date line. Shavuos, one of the shilas is Sfira. Other shilas are, let's say a woman's counting Shiva Nikiyim, right? That's another one of the big shilas. Does her count be affected by the crossing of the date line? And what I want to share with you in just the last few moments that we have here is, this is also from the Star K, and again, I just find it very interesting. Let me try to find it quickly. Here we go. From the Star K, but I want to share with you the following scenarios. I'm going to share my screen so that everyone can see it. Give me 1 second. I'm having a little technical difficulty. Here we go. So this is sample itineraries. This is from the Star K. Again, I just find it very interesting. I enjoy the halachas behind it. So westbound. Okay, so again, westbound, you are losing a day. You're leaving Los Angeles at 10:30 p.m. on Sunday, and you're arriving in Sydney at 6:05 a.m. on Tuesday. So you've skipped Monday, basically. So says the Star K, except for the end of the flight, this 14.5-hour flight is through the night. One davens Maariv in Los Angeles, right, because it's 10:30 at night. After crossing the date line, an additional Maariv is not required. Now, you don't have to daven Maariv again now for Monday night, even though it instantaneously becomes the next night, right? So you could, in theory, have had to daven Maariv for Sunday night and Maariv for Monday night 10 minutes apart. So the halacha is not that way, because we said that halachas regarding the time of the day are not affected by the date line. If Sunday night is the 32nd day of the Omer, and one counts Sfira in Los Angeles, one counts 33 days without a bracha upon landing in Sydney on Tuesday morning. On Tuesday night, you count 34, and on all remaining flights at night, a bracha is recited. It makes sense, because you skipped Monday night. So we know that when it comes to Sfira and you skip Monday night, you just count during the day without a bracha. On Hanukkah, one lights 3 candles on Sunday night before leaving Los Angeles. One lights 5 on Tuesday night in Sydney. The fourth night is skipped. Right, you skipped a day of the calendar. If a half siktara was performed on the previous day, Shabbos, Sunday is day 1, and Monday is skipped. Tuesday is day 2. And as you don't skip a day of Shiva Nikiyim, she would still have to wait 7 full calendaric days until being able to go to the mikvah on Sunday night. Now let's do the opposite scenario. Now you guys understand why I get so excited about this. Right, what happens if I go eastbound? Okay, so now I am gaining a day. So I leave Hong Kong at 12:40 p.m. Tuesday, and I arrive at 2:15 p.m. Tuesday. So even though it's a 13-hour flight, I'm really losing only 2 hours of my life, right? So it says here, the sun sets several hours into this 13-hour flight. It then rises several hours later. One daven Tuesday mincha an hour after takeoff, maariv after nightfall, and shacharis after sunrise. Although the date line has been crossed before sunrise, and it's Tuesday morning again, one davens the Tuesday shacharis on the plane and Tuesday mincha in Chicago. One davens 2 Tuesday shacharises in minchas, as these lawns are governed by cycles of sunrise and sunset, not days of the week. If Tuesday is 33 ba'omer, 33 days of the Omer is counted on Monday night. After landing in Chicago, 33 is counted again without a bracha. And on Tuesday night, you count 34 days. Right? Hanukkah, 3 are lit Monday night, 4 are lit Tuesday night. Hallel is recited 9 times, as one daven shacharis on Tuesday morning, right, which is the third day of Hanukkah, twice. So that's just it's a summary of everything we discussed, but again, I find it very interesting to discuss it from the halachic terms that are articulated very well on the Star K website. So that's a little bit of the halachas of the International Dateline. Again, it's a broad overview of some of the halachas. I find it very interesting. At least now you understand why it is there is a secular dateline. You understand why there's a controversy when it comes to the halachic dateline. We offered 3 approaches in the later Achronim, really, about how to navigate the sugya of the International Dateline. Again, the approach of, I should say, my poskim, is that we apply Safek Deraisa L'chumra, and therefore you're going to keep Shabbos, the Deraisa Shabbos, 2 days. Again, not everyone agrees. That's just my Yayu Rebbeim. You're going to keep Shabbos 2 days, one day for just the Deoraisas. The other day is Saturday is always going to be real Shabbos, because that's going to be two out of the three opinions. The third opinion, out of a Suffolk, we keep the Deoraisas, not the Derabanans. There are a whole slew of other Shilas. I get these questions all the time, where you can depart in one area and you could hit Shabbos and for like 15 minutes and have to make Kiddush quickly. Like, it's a whole problem if you're on the plane. A lot of very detailed and nuanced Shilas when it comes to that. But next time you travel, you're welcome to consult me and I will help you think it through. Everyone have a wonderful day.